Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Bez Hashem, BPJ, Shir number 152. We are in the book, 13 Things Mentally Strong Couples Don't Do. And the next one is that they don't communicate with disrespect. Unfortunately, surveys came out that 36% of people say that their spouses are sometimes rude or condescending or disrespectful. Very often they tell each other, you know, they can't have a normal conversation anymore. That they don't know how to have a conversation without yelling. Or, you know, and when you're accused of that, they'll roll their eyes and say, you know, I have to yell because you can't listen. And the more we talk about the problems, you know, the more it gets worse. And there's raising of voices, there's using sarcasm, interruptions, blaming each other, putting each other down repeatedly. So this person, Amy Moore, the author, had a couple that had these habits, gave them a checklist of their common disrespectful communication habits, and their first homework assignment was to keep track of their own disrespectful communication. And, you know, initially they didn't want to do that. They just wanted to keep track when the other spouse, the other one, was disrespectful of them, not the other way around. But, you know, she told them that wasn't the assignment. If you're really serious about working through these things, you have to work on your own. And they did that. And they came up with lists of disrespectful behaviors they exhibited each day towards each other. And the truth is once they wrote it down and marked it down, they both said it was surprising to see how the wife said how rude she often was, and the husband said it was eye-opening, you know, this list, to, you know, once they became aware of their own patterns. And they agreed jointly, the couple, to start working on addressing their communication patterns to change that into respectful communications. There are disrespectful behaviors that we're talking about here. We're not talking about abuse. Abusive behavior is when you are threatening, there's intimidation, there's screaming, deep shaming, deep humiliation. We're not talking when it hits that level. You know, that requires a whole separate type of improvement that needs to be worked on. But here are some examples of disrespectful behavior. Rolling eyes at each other, saying mean things, calling names, disparaging remarks. When they ask you not to say certain things about them or to them, you do it anyway. Or you share embarrassing things about them in front of others, even though you know it bothers them. And people will do that in front of their kids, in front of their children, disparage their spouse. Or, you know, mean-spirited nicknames or sarcasm, raising voices often, a disrespectful tone of voice, all of those things. So with this particular couple, that this author was working with, she worked out ground rules that they were going to discuss tough subjects and tackle uncomfortable issues in the office and to be a safe space. And they had to be in agreement that while they communicate, there's no yelling, no name calling, no put downs. And if someone was disrespectful, we'd pause to address it right away, to shift that behavior. So the truth is unfortunately, you know, how they communicate is often how they feel about each other. Because generally speaking, if you feel highly of your spouse, you tend to have deep feelings for them. And if you disrespect your spouse, you'll have underlying disdain for them. So you have to be very, very careful about this. John Gottman, we reviewed some of his books and will continue to do so, identified four communication styles that predict divorce, the end of relationships. He calls them four horsemen, and this is what it looks like. Number one is the criticism. You know, when giving your spouse constructive feedback, that could be helpful, but when you attack their character, that's not helpful at all. So if you call your spouse selfish or lazy, that leads to an escalating pattern of unhealthy communication. That's criticism. The next one is contempt. Contempt is like an air of superiority. It involves usually sarcasm, mocking, and that's the single greatest predictor of divorce, the sarcasm and mocking. The contempt is one of the greatest indicators of and predictors of divorce. Defensiveness means that when you in response to criticism, you blame the other person. For example, if they asked you, did you pick up the cleaners from the, did you pick up the suit from the cleaners or the dress from the cleaners? And you didn't, you'll shoot back. Well, you forgot to pay your own bills, and that escalates the situation, the defensiveness. And the fourth thing is stonewalling. In response to contempt, someone may disengage to end the attack, and they just simply turn, shut things down. Other examples of disrespectful communication is using your phone when your spouse is trying to talk to you, or not talking to your spouse, consulting with them before making a major decision, or interrupting them, calling them names, teasing them when you're asked not to tease them, using the silent treatment, and lying, or making insensitive jokes. However, the reverse of that, the healthy communication that we want to work on is, number one, active listening, maintaining a conversational tone, apologizing, using humor in an appropriate way, and learning how to stay calm. So everyone needs to really make their own cheshbon nefesh. Are they communicating disrespectfully, or are they communicating with respect? Why do we communicate with disrespect? You see, often when couples, when they were dating or in the early years of marriage, they were respectful for each other and kind to each other. But as life gets busier and you fall into routines, you become increasingly impatient with one another. And the disrespectful communication increases over time. And when one of them is unkind, the other one shoots back and returns the concept of being unkind. And that's when the conversation's going downhill. Sometimes disrespectful communication, unfortunately, can become the norm in the house. And it's not easy. It's hard to turn things around and start communicating in a healthier way. That's making a real change. You have to really work hard at it. So if you usually sigh loudly and roll your eyes, and all of that, or your body language, you have to learn how to shift your body language in a more healthy way. So there was a 2014 study published by the Association of Psychological Science that they talk about that why is it indeed that the people that we are closest to become the victims of the people we speak to with the most disrespect. And they examined that idea, and there's a term coined called everyday aggression. That what happens is it's a tendency to let out our aggression and disdain to the people that are closest to us in our everyday lives. So the main side of this is that this is just the obvious fact that we have to fight back towards, that the people that we interact the most frequently are likely to anger us. That applies in, let's say, someone you work with on a day-to-day basis, but it applies, of course, to a marriage, to one's own husband and wife. Another fact is that we have the power to hurt people with direct action, like a verbal attack, or a non-direct action, like a silent treatment. And the way we hurt people depends on our relationships with them. So the idea is that we have to make sure that habits, or being close to one another, or being more familiar with one another, or interacting frequently with one another, does not create that negative trend. That's a very, very important insight here. So she had this particular couple that went deep down to the unresolved issues that sometimes created that this disrespectful communication, instead of talking about it, because a lot of their disrespectful communication was through that because of their unresolved pain. So, for example, in one case, the wife was a stay-at-home parent for 6 months after having a baby, after the daughter was born, and she wanted to still be a mother for another 6 months before going back to work. And because of the financial pressures that the husband was worried about, she encouraged her to find work. She reluctantly returned to work, but was angry at her husband to send her back. Because their plan was a full year, and she was pushed into it. She felt she was pushed into it after 6 months, but she never told her husband that she felt that resentment. He thought that she was on board with that, and later Another thing is, again, this you have to ask a shaila about another child and ready for another child and the halachic shailas of it. But the idea of that, the reason it's so important, not just to ask a shaila about those things. If, let's say, one of them, the husband wants another child right away and the wife says, I just simply can't, I'm overwhelmed and whatever it is, that you ask the shaila, that the Rav understands both sides of it and everything, instead of just not really doing that, that could create a tremendous amount of difficulties afterwards because they never verbalize their feelings. They never showed each other openly how they feel. So there's a festering underlying resentment that goes in there that needs to be worked through. So that's another thing, to work through those type of differences. And when you do so and you bring it out in the open in a healthy way, the relationship ultimately tends to improve. One of the best ways to improve your communication is to become a better listener. Good listener does not mean you just stay quiet. It means that show that you feel a better, that you have a better understanding and that you actually do. Again, we talked about having separate shiurim on just the art of listening, but as is Hashem, with Hashem's help, we hope to do that. There's a reflective listening, which shows that you are intent on understanding, trying to understand, which means that what you do is, when you hear the other person, your wife or your husband, you summarize what the other person says. You don't parrot them. You don't go reflect back word for word like a parrot or like a machine, but you reflect back what you heard. You don't add your own opinion, but from it, it's very, very clear that you really, truly understood. So, for example, you would say, I want to make sure I understand. Your boss is telling you that you have to start holding weekly meetings to give updates on the project, and you don't have time to get the project done, and you think adding more meetings to your schedule isn't fair to you because it's making even more work for you. Did I understand that correctly? So, and if they add more facts, you reflect those facts back. That is called reflective listening, to make sure the other person, that you really are conveying to them that you got what the other person is saying, you repeat it in a clear way to the other person. To address unhealed wounds, sometimes an emotional pain could spill over to the people that are closest to you. That's a very important yesod. This happens all the time. You have emotional pain that is spilling over to the person closest to you. That's creating that difficulty and that disrespect. So you could heal those things, those inner things that you need to resolve. To state your feelings, to accept responsibility for your feelings, to apologize when you didn't act properly in your feelings, in the way you conveyed them. And to say you're going to do it differently and actually try to do it differently. So, for example, this wife that was upset, since she dressed her emotional wounds, so she said as follows, you know, and this is a healthy thing. It was frustrating for me having to go back to work after we had our baby. I was disappointed I couldn't stay home longer. I didn't tell you how I felt at the time. Instead, I begrudgingly went to work because I knew you were worried about money. And I'm sorry I didn't talk about it at the time. I want to make sure that in the future I tell you how I feel so we can work it together and I won't hold a grudge. This is the biggest side, by the way. All this that we're saying here is all, this book particularly is not written by, I don't think she's Jewish, but it's certainly not a Torah-based book. But this yesod, as almost everything in this book, we could trace back to yesodos in Torah. One, and this is one example of it. This concept here of addressing emotional wounds in a healthy way and letting it out in a healthy way, not to be, that helps you not be a grudge, is exactly what the Torah says by You have to really, really work towards that in a healthy way. You say things with respect. You know, that's the idea. You know, communication is a skill that you keep learning and sharpening over time. So that's a very, very important insight. So this is kedai to study, the way you communicate to each other. And the way you enhance the communication will really, truly help you. You ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu always for help to help you develop those communication skills as best as you could. And then you work towards it. Now, Bolatayer, Messiah, and Oisai. Bracha v'Hatzlacha.